Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to turn our attention to curling. The game of curling made its way to the U.S., I think, in the early 1800s and has flourished in Wisconsin. And we're going to talk about the sport of curling and an upcoming championship between the curlers from the U.S. and those from Canada. Two guests for you. Sydney Schrader is with us today. She's team captain of USA and of USA women's curling. She is the skip for the team, also part of the Madison Curling Club. Sydney, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Great to have you with us. Randy Furbe is with us as well. I hope I got your pronunciation right, Randy, on your name.
Yeah. Furby, yeah.
Furby, okay. He is 6-time Canadian and 4-time world curling champion, Canada Sports Hall of Fame inductee, and an Everest Curling Executive Committee member. And Randy, thank you for joining us as well.
I'm glad to be here.
So as we talk with our two guests, I hope you'll join in. Are you a fan of curling? What attracted you to the sport? What would you like to know about the members of Team USA or maybe making the team? Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Sydney, you may you might know a friend of mine. His name's Dan Detmers. And he is with the McFarland rink. And he took me over there once and said, I'll show you how to do it, and how to curl. And I put on the curling shoes. And on my first attempt, I made an extraordinary flop across the ice. Which I actually wish somebody had been shooting some video, because I would have liked to see that. It was the most extraordinary flop, I think, in the history of curling across the ice. Oh my goodness. Well, maybe we should even start. I know there's There are people who are very familiar with curling who are listening in, but what are the basics and how difficult is it to learn? It looks so easy when you watch others who really know what they're doing do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty common question we get is, you know, it looks like everyone can do it. And the flop is common, unfortunately, but if you can get yourself back up, it is a great time, and it is not that hard to learn. It's very hard to get good at, but anyone can really play it. That's part of why I love it so much. I've curled against people who are in their 90s, and I've curled against people who are 12, so it's truly for everyone.
So it's, I was kind of surprised at first at the weight of the rock that you have to throw. To you, is it physically demanding?
Yes, it's definitely a sport of longevity, you know. You throw quite a few rocks in a game, so it gets tiring for sure. And I don't sweep very much, but the girls on my team that do, yeah, their arms are tired.
Randy, turn to you for a second. What are the common strategies used in curling matches? I find that really, really fascinating to look at those strategies.
Yeah, I think I'll go back a little bit on that. I think most people that are watch curling or are intrigued by curling, they get addicted to watching how we call the game. It's kind of like chess in a way, even though I don't like using that that definition, but I mean, at every level, there's a different degree of strategy and whatnot. But I mean, if you just show up with your three guys or three friends at night or however many friends you're going to go out and just try to experiment with the game, I guess you just get in the hack where you put your foot in, you throw the rock out, and you know, you just try to get it into the house, which is at the far end, and you play X amount of ends and who's ever closest. But once you get to the top level, there's a lot of strategies with guards and corner guards and hit and rolls and all that stuff. But I mean, that takes years and years of time and practice to develop the strategy. I mean, there's people that play this game that have played it for years that they're still not on this strategic level as the top competitive teams. But again, you don't need to have that to enjoy and play the game on a daily basis or a fun basis with your friends.
Yeah, it's amazing to me to watch, though. And you're right. I mean, I know some, Dan Detmers, but many other friends who have done it for a long time. They're reasonably good at it, but they're certainly not at a level that you see, for example, in the Olympics or this upcoming championship between the U.S. and Canada, which I'm really looking forward to. Looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, so are we.
Yeah, I bet you are. Steve emailed us, by the way, and Steve says, thanks for talking curling today. They started a new club in Rhinelander last year in kind of northern Wisconsin, getting ready for the second season this fall. First new club in decades in Wisconsin, great sport for communities, all ages, families. Stick and wheelchair, para curling as well.
Yeah.
So, you want to comment?
Yeah.
Randy?
Absolutely. I'd love to comment on that. I mean, traditionally in Canada, we have, we've probably got 700, 750 curling clubs in Canada. I mean, it goes hand in hand with a hockey rink. And, you know, when you got a hockey rink, you got a curling club right next door to it. So traditionally, I mean, we go back 100 years in curling that it's been traditionally been four women, four men playing the game. And over the years, you know, we've kind of come across times where it's hard to find four people to commit to a weekly or a biweekly league. So we've developed, or curling has developed, you know, stick curling where you can play with two people now. You can go up there and just push, you know, your stick is attached to the rock, which is very interesting. And you don't have to, you know, you don't have to develop the proper skills, I guess, from sliding out. So it makes it enjoyable just to be out on the ice and making the same shots, even though you don't got the sliding down and all that sort of stuff. You know, there's mixed doubles now. There's all kinds of curling. You know, there's wheelchair curling. It just involves a more wide array of people to enjoy the sport. So we just got to keep developing our game and looking at ways to encourage more people to participate.
Yeah, and I got to believe that some people may start out in that easier fashion and maybe turn to the traditional form.
Correct. You know, and the traditional sport in some aspect, I'm not saying it's going away, but you need more people to play. You need 30 teams or 20 teams of four. But if you play with your wife in a mixed doubles league or something like that, well, you only need two of you people, you know, two players instead of four. So it's kind of easier to get together. And these are kind of new events coming along in the last few years. So it's taken a while to process it, and, you know, and for all curling clubs to adapt to that. So it's a process, but it's coming along.
Sydney, your position is skip, and I've got a question from someone. What does that mean?
No, that is a great question. I guess I don't know why it's called the skip, but what it basically means is I handle a lot of the strategy on the team. I'm the one that's yelling sweep at the sweepers, so I get the fun job. And then I also get all the pressure of throwing the last two rocks. So it's the most fun in my opinion, but it's one of the hardest.
So what does a typical training session look like?
Well, it kind of depends on the time of year. Right now we've been traveling a little bit to get ice time, but we try to do as much team shots as we can. my team has actually only played together for this last season. That was our first season together, and it went very well.
Obviously.
But, yeah. But, no, we talk strategy with our coach on and off the ice all the time. We watch old games, you know, anything we can do just to consume more curling and get more comfortable.
You also work as an engineer in Spring Green. How do you balance prep for competitions with your work?
Very carefully. No, everyone else on the team is pretty willing to help me accommodate with work. I work, 45 plus hours a week. So they help with a lot of the logistical things outside of it so that I'm able to just focus mostly on ice and do the strategy and throw as many rocks as we can when we get the chance.
Well, let's talk. Wait a second. I want to talk about the Everest North American Curling Club Championships and what that entails in just a minute. But a reminder, Randy Furby is with us today. He is world curling champion, a four-time world curling champion, Canada's Sports Hall of Fame inductee, and an Everest Curling Executive Committee member. Sydney Schrader is Team USA women's skip. I'm Larry Mueller. You can join in with a question or comment. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. You're listening to WPR News. Taking a look at the sport of curling today and the upcoming event, the Everest North American Curling Club Championships, the North American, and that means the USA team versus Canada's team, something that I guess, Randy, hasn't happened in the past?
No. This is a brand new event just give a little background on Everest. We sponsor a lot of curling events in Canada. We've been sponsoring the Canadian seniors for 10 years. Then we sponsor the Canadian club championships now for 4 years. And the CEO of Everest, he's actually based out of Houston, Texas, believe it or not. And it's a North America-wide company. And so every year we get together, myself and him, and we try to figure out a way to make the sport bigger and bring more viewership to our sport. So this is something we thought about, I'm going to say a couple of years ago, where we would like to take it. And so we were sitting around a year and a half ago, at least that long ago, we says, well, why don't we come up with an Everest North America Championship, USA versus Canada? And it just so happened that USA had an event that they determined a club winner and Canada determines a club winner. So it was kind of a natural thing to put together. So We hired a team and we got TV on board, and this is going to be the first time ever that curling is going to be broadcast across North America live at the same time outside of the Olympics. I mean, but that's more of a different thing. But this is the first time curling is going to be broadcast live across North America, and we're thrilled about that. And these curlers should be excited about it also. You know, we got a major network picking it up, so it's it's going to be, you know, I'm quite nervous moving forward because we're 2 weeks out, and you know, and hopefully everything's going to run pretty smoothly. So, again, so that was kind of the start of it, and where it's going to end, you know, we've had conversation. Maybe we take this globally. You know, we're a club championship from Sweden and Scotland and so forth and so forth. Maybe we eventually get together, but we've decided to start a little smaller and just have USA versus Canada, which is a great rivalry in all of sports. You know, when Canada's playing the U.S., it doesn't matter if it's hockey or I guess it's just pretty much hockey. And, you know, we get a lot of feed on that. So we're hoping to get to start it off here this year with a great year and great viewership.
Well, I play in a golf tournament every year in Canada, so the talk always turns to who's better, and of course Canada has such a history, and but it's always fun to have that kind of conversation. Sydney, how'd your team wind up in this event?
So we all sort of knew each other loosely from growing up curling juniors. You know, the world of junior curling in the U.S. anyway is quite small.
Yeah.
Still great competition, but quite small, so you get to know everyone. And then after college, I moved to Madison mostly for curling, to be honest, and picked up the other three. Our lead was kind of a fluke, but it was a great matchup, and you know, we've loved curling together ever since.
Well, I love it. Barry in who's near Black River Falls, we'll go to you. Hi, Barry.
Well, hi, thanks for taking my call. I grew up, I'm in my mid-70s, but I grew up in Superior, Wisconsin, and Bud Somerville was a local hero and a well-known curler throughout the curling world. But the popularity of curling wasn't nearly what it seems to be today. I'm wondering if your guests could opine on the why has curling become so popular?
Ah, good question.
I can touch on that a little bit. You know, by the way, even though I'm from Canada, I've heard of Bud Somerville. I think I even had the pleasure of meeting him years and years ago, and he definitely was a forefront curler for the U.S. because I believe he won the world championship I'm dating myself, probably 40 years ago now, but I know he was very competitive and very well respected in the curling world. Now, I think why curling I think the Olympics has got lots to do with that. You know, I mean, anytime the Olympics is on, it brings more eyes to your sport, whether it's a top level sport or a lower sport. But people are always intrigued by curling because of the strategy. I mean, curling looks like an easy sport that anybody can do, and it's not. But again, I would encourage anybody to go give it a go. I mean, these athletes put a lot of time and effort into it, and they're basically common people. You know, they all got jobs. They're not high paid athletes. And I think the general public likes that when they see, you know, a regular person achieving a really special goal. So I think that's part of it. I mean, there's a lot of curling clubs being built across the U.S. and worldwide. And all we need to do is for the sport to grow even more is to get people to try it. Cause I think once people try our sport, they love it. I've never heard of a player or a participants say, nah, this is not for me. Everybody likes the sport, and I think they'll grow from there. But the problem is getting people into the curling club to try it.
Yeah. I think we go back to the U.S. Winning the gold medal, the men's team winning the gold medal. I'm trying to remember. It was a fascinating story, and I think you're right, Randy. That's probably where curling really kind of took off. Sydney, you would agree with that or not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely after the men's team won gold at the Olympics, I think you saw a huge increase. And it's cool because some of those guys on that team are from Madison as well. Yeah. So it definitely helped around the area here.
It did indeed. Barry, thanks. Ray and Broadhead, your turn. Hi, Ray.
Yeah, so my question was just, I know Randy has played internationally a bunch. I was just curious if there's anything like very noticeable about the strategy in men's curling versus women's curling.
Yeah, maybe you could both comment on that.
You know what? My opinion, I think, is very similar. A lot of women follow men's and vice versa, so they pick up little tidbits and whatnot along the way. But generally, the strategy is pretty much the same because, I mean, in curling, it's not like baseball or football where you don't have the strength or whatever. But generally, you know, if you watch and you follow a sport, it could be pretty much the same.
All right. And Sydney, you would agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'd say maybe more at the beginner level. The guys tend to throw a lot more takeouts because that's a heck of a lot more fun. but yeah, I'd say once you get up there, it's pretty much the same. Everyone's got to be able to throw everything.
John in Onalaska, we'll give you a chance. Hi, John.
Hi. I was wondering, I've been watching curling, you know, on TV and so forth, and I often wonder at how you know the skip knows. You know, is it an environmental? For instance, if your auditorium or your rink is filled with people, it must warm up the ice, and then it gets slipperier. And if it, and or also, what else? Well, that would be one question. Maybe there's different ice, that, and you have to know or sense that before you start the game.
Yeah, good question, John. Well, Sydney, let's go to you, and then Randy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not an ice maker, so I'm not going to be able to tell you the physics behind it. But having people on the ice versus playing in a regular curling club makes a huge difference. And typically you get practice before a game, so that helps you get comfortable. But you do have to, on the fly, adjust as conditions change. Ice makers do a great job of keeping it consistent, but you can only control so much. So part of that's just years of experience reading ice for 15 years now. You get a feel for it.
Randy, anything to add there?
Yeah, actually being an ice maker is an art. It's not like they go into this inside a curling club or an arena and they just put the ice down and away you go. There's an art to it. There's humidifiers in place. There's airflow in place. And I know what you're saying, that it does, you know, I played in arenas where it's like you're playing in a t-shirt. It's crazy how warm it is, and yet the ice 3 feet below from your head is maintaining a proper temperature, and that's where the ice makers come in. I mean, obviously the ice is measured all the time and monitored all the time, and they keep close track of it. So it's definitely an art form to get the right ice. But generally, in a arena, the ice is better than in a curling club because there's more. They got more technical and more machines and blah 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 and all that sort of stuff to take care of it.
Yeah, I would think so. And before I forget, I do. You mentioned the championship is the Everest North American Curling Club Championship, women's is coming up Tuesday, September 17th.
Mm-hmm. Yep, correct.
And where do we watch it?
Yeah, sports 7 p.m. Central, and then the men's is September 18th, 7 p.m. Central on CBS also. And it, you know, tune in. Please tune into this. I mean, we need eyes on this, and I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised at what we got planned. It's going to be not a traditional broadcast. It's going to be kind of exciting and different and kind of cool. You know, we're trying to go the way of the younger people instead of the older people traditionally, which has watched this game. So we got some interesting things planned for this event.
Hmm. And Sydney, you're going to be in it. So what are some of those interesting things?
Great question. I don't know if I'm privy to all that information, but we were told, you know, when we won, this is going to be a very unique event. The energy is going to be high. Like Randy said, we're trying to go towards a younger crowd, which works because I'm the oldest one on the team at 27. So I think it's going to be very high energy, and I think it's just going to be super exciting. You know, great time. I'm very, very excited to play in it.
And where is it held?
Oh, it's in it's at the Rock Creek Curling Club in Lafayette, Colorado.
The Rock Creek Curling Club in that's a lot of C's there in Colorado, and it's September 17th, 6 p.m. And 7 p.m. Central Time, and it's on the CBS Sports Network. So. Yep. And then the 18th, it's once again 6 p.m. Mountain Time, 7 p.m. our time on the CBS Sports Network. This has been a great pleasure. Randy, Sydney, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. You know, I think this is great. It's a great awareness thing. And anytime I can help out with the sport of curling, I love to give my 2 cents worth, I guess you could say.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Randy Ferbe and Sydney Schrader, our guests today. I'm looking forward to watching those events. It's the first one between Team USA and Team Canada. Well, I tell you what, thanks for joining in today. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, our executive director is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Again, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on WPR News.